Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, December 12, 2009. I'm Harley Schlanger and I will be your host today. At the beginning of his December 3rd webcast, Lyndon LaRouche announced that we are introducing something new in politics, that we will be running three LaRouche Youth Movement members for Congress, and that these campaigns will change the direction of our nation, that they will be part of LaRouche's campaign to initiate what he described as real change at a time of a full-throttled crisis facing civilization. This might be confusing to some of our listeners. How, you might ask, are three candidates supposed to do this? Even if they win, it would only be three seats out of 435. These kinds of questions demonstrate a lack of imagination, which is essential in strategic thinking. By announcing these campaigns, we've already overturned the business-as-usual feature of the ordinary midterm elections. Further, unless you've been pulling a Rip Van Winkle or spending too much time investigating the Tiger Woods scandal, you must be aware that much of the population in the United States has been aroused by the collapse of the economy, by the insanity of the greeny global warming push in Washington and European capitals with its commitment to global depopulation, as well as the effort to impose Nazi-style healthcare reform. The real question, therefore, is not how can three people be effective if they win their elections after January 2011, but what can we do today to educate the mass strike which is already underway to change policy now. I'm both honored and delighted to be joined on the LaRouche Show today by hopefully all three of our candidates, all of whom are running in the 2010 Democratic Party primaries. Rachel Brown, who is running against incumbent windbag Barney Frank. Summer Shields is running against the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi. And Keisha Rogers, who's running in Tom DeLay's old district, which includes the Lyndon Johnson Space Center, the home of NASA. Also joining us will be Adam Sturman, who is a leader of the campaign team working in Purcellville, Virginia. Adam is often the man behind the scenes in much of the video product coming from the LaRouche Youth Movement in Purcellville, and he's working with me as part of our crack political team to back up these candidates. So I'd like to begin by introducing each of the candidates who will say something about their campaign, and then we'll take up this question of how these campaigns will start changing politics immediately. So I don't know if Rachel's on the phone, so let me begin with Summer. Summer, why should someone vote for you rather than Nancy Pelosi?
Well, thank you, Harley. I think to begin with, I would like to just jog people's memory and her constituents' memories. I think there's a growing dissatisfaction with her herself and the U.S. Congress, but she blocked the impeachment of Dick Cheney, knowing full well that he played a major role in torture in Abu Ghraib and other places, who knows where else. She spearheaded the trillion-dollar bailout, trillions of dollars of bailouts, and she's been a tool of financial interest. And a quick anecdote is that I ran into her daughter at the Democratic State Convention in California, and I brought up Felix Rohatyn, the infamous banker and fascist from New York City, and she refused to talk to me because I disagreed with her association with Felix Rohatyn. Now, my campaign is to put a new face on Congress, and that's to end globalization as a necessary part of a reorganization of a bankrupt economy, and I think everybody at this point knows it's bankrupt. At this point, the income level of society has been destroyed, and people need real jobs. So a key focus of what I'm going to be doing is a continuation of what we have been doing with the LaRouche Political Action Committee, fighting for scientific development, and with the spearhead being a move toward the new manned Mars mission as a necessary shift in policy for the United States. And this will include nuclear power. It will include good things like functional rail transportation, which is required. It's the cheapest and fastest way to transport goods. And it's going to require a fight because we have a lot of people who disagree with this policy, and these people unfortunately happen to be supporting Nancy Pelosi and a large portion of the U.S. Congress right now. And there's an understandable rage inside the U.S. population, an understandable anger. And right now, I'm one of the angry people, and that's why I'm running for Congress.
Okay. And Keisha, let's turn to you. You ran for office for the office of Democratic Party chairman in Texas in 2006 and received a lot of support then. Why run for Congress now?
Well, we actually have to have a perspective for the future and a national policy orientation. I am running in the 22nd Congressional District of Texas, which, as you stated earlier on the show, it encompasses the Johnson Space Center NASA area. And I will tell you that Johnson Space Center NASA development of our space program of a Moon Mars mission orientation has been at the bottom of the list when it comes to putting the financial interest and bailouts first. And my campaign, and also the campaigns of the other candidates on the line here, is going to represent a national policy orientation around principles and ideas that are going to reinvigorate the nation for space development, for a Moon Mars mission orientation. And many people might ask what that means. First of all, I have to say that the incumbent, Pete Olson, and what has happened in terms of NASA development and space development in the 22nd District, which is a vital area to the nation, to the United States, has not been put at the top of the list. And we're going to have to change that. The top of the list under in his terms has been that we continue to allow for the financial interest to be bailed out or to be privatized, and that we push a policy, as he has been involved in, of breaking down Glass-Steagall. And this is something that has to be reimposed again. We have to reimpose the banking regulatory policies as seen under Franklin Roosevelt and also John F. Kennedy, who had a mission orientation in mind about what it meant to put a man on the moon. And we're going to have to go a lot further than that if we want to give our young people and our nation a future orientation and perspective, how we're going to actually give them the skills that they need to put them back to work in productive employment again. So that's what my campaign would represent, along with these large-scale infrastructure projects that would drive an orientation for the next 50 years in space development.
Okay, and Rachel, did you get on? Okay, I thought maybe I heard her get on. Well, Rachel was on the program a couple weeks ago. She will have a website up later this or early this next week. And let me just use that as an occasion to bring Adam on. As I said, Adam has done a lot of the work in putting together the LaRouche Pack videos. When you go on the LaRouche Pack website and see the off-the-cuff, see the other videos, and now we're going to have these websites. Why don't you give people a little preview, Adam, of what we're going to have up on the websites and how these will function as part of the campaign?
Well, the main thing with the websites, Harley, is that they're going to they're going to put forward primarily video production as the main mode of communication to the population. We face a situation today where a lot of young people really don't have functioning attention spans. And so we really need to use the video medium to reach them and really change the population. So I think the websites are really going to be function as educational tools through the medium of multimedia production and video.
And what do you have in the works now? I know we have we hope to have Keisha's site up next week, maybe Rachel's also. You've been doing some work with the candidates. What do you have in process so far?
Well, right now we're working on just introductional videos to give people a sense out there of what the candidates represent. We're taking a national approach to the videos, so instead of focusing on local issues, we're taking events of national and international significance, and that's really what we're doing right now, putting together the introduction videos, and after we get through the introductional videos, then we can move on to more detailed and more personalized productions for each candidate.
Okay, let me just remind our listeners, you're listening to The LaRouche Show. It is December 12th, 2009. We will have these websites up. They will be Rachel Brown for Congress, Summer Shields for Congress, and Keisha Rogers for Congress. And in addition to the educational material Adam was just discussing, you will be able to make contributions directly. Now, as you got a sense so far, let me just say for Rachel's campaign, she's running against the notorious windbag and bailout maven Barney Frank. And Rachel's first confrontation with Barney Frank became somewhat famous on the internet because Barney Frank started ranting about debating dining room tables and what planet are you from and certain other kinds of almost unintelligible grunts and groans. Now, Barney Frank, as the chairman of the House Financial Service Administration or subcommittee of the House of Representatives, has overseen every bailout that's occurred under Paulson's watch and now under Secretary Geithner's watch. So these will be crucial issues. So that's a national campaign. Summer, your campaign with Pelosi will draw national interest. And Keisha, your campaign, for especially the emphasis on NASA, will draw national focus. Now, as you were at the webcast with Mr. LaRouche, he spoke about how we're going to change the policies now. We're not waiting till January 2011. Summer, why don't you just talk about, you know, let the listeners know why that's necessary and how you think we can do that.
Well, I think it's necessary because, as Mr. LaRouche has pointed out on several occasions and regularly for a very, very long time, that the whole world financial system, the whole world economy is ending right now. It ended already. And we're basically, as it was put today, you're trying to adjust a dead system. Every vote that's going on in the Congress is an adjustment of a dead system. Each time they say reform of something, it's really an adjustment of something that's already dead. So instead of trying to engage in employing people in a series of undertaker jobs, essentially what we can do is we have to engage, and a big portion of my campaign is to push for the engagement of the United States with Russia, India, and China, which has been prescribed by Mr. LaRouche, and also that constituency, a large portion of that of the constituency within San Francisco, which is where Nancy Pelosi, where I'm running against Nancy Pelosi, a big chunk of the constituency there is made up of these three nations. And so right now, it's imperative that we have that kind of discussion take place in globalization, which has bankrupted all of our nations. None of us have benefited from this, and push a policy to return back to self-sufficiency. And the point that Mr. LaRouche has made is that China can't make it unless they're able to turn into a self-sufficient nation. They have a lot of poor people there, hundreds of millions of poor people, which is more poor people than we have U.S. citizens. India is in a similar situation. And so if we reach out and talk to these countries and form immediate treaty agreements to put in place a new international financial system that's a credit system. So there's a financing mechanism to build the kind of infrastructure project that's necessary for these nations to become self-sufficient again, we can win. We can get out of this thing.
Well, Summer, Adam mentioned just a couple of moments ago that we're not going to be focusing on local issues per se. You know, there's a famous statement by Tip O'Neill who said all politics is local, and I think that's part of the problem with politics as we've seen it in the last 40 years. But there are skeptics out there who will say, well, LaRouche is talking about a Pacific orientation. He's talking about a new financial system. Isn't that something that's just too big? How do you respond to that kind of criticism?
Well, I think Adam and I, we've been having some fun. We're doing something similar to what Keisha did with her campaign video. But if you can make the point being is that you have to bring someone's imagination immediately much higher than what they're faced with. Because there's a danger in this, and this is something that Mr. LaRouche brought up, is that people are being splintered right now into kind of warring little groups, an age-old strategy, divide and conquer, where you've got these different groups, these different interests who say, well, my need is this, I want this, my need is that. And the danger is, as Mr. LaRouche pointed out in his webcast, is that if you have that kind of mentality in a time like this, then you're dealing with something that could be totally catastrophic. Instead of uniting people around an idea, ideas, this is something that has been lacking in politics in the United States for quite some time. If you can unite people around an idea and you realize that everyone has been destroyed by a common crisis, which is globalization, it's free trade, which doesn't work, and if you can unite people around a common interest, then you can get them to recognize that we can win this thing. But to the extent that they focus on the small issues, then we're going to lose everything.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, Summer. You know, the Internet, even if you look at the scope of the Internet, it's a great example because we live in a totally interconnected world at this point. You can't really look at individual economies anymore. The idea of just looking at a local economy or just a state economy or even a regional economy doesn't really work at this point in humanity's development. And so that's what we have to give people a sense of. And we live in this interconnected world. We have to respect the cultures of other countries and other peoples. So that's really what we have to get across to the people, is that you can no longer deny the fact that we live in a world where all cultures of the planet are going to work together for a common cause of society, of humanity.
Well, let me throw out something that you probably would hear from Barack Obama right now. In fact, I think he brought this up at his ironic award of the Nobel Peace Prize, that he would say the same thing. Well, we have a connected society. That's why we have to cut back CO2. That's why we have to cut back greenhouse emissions. So clearly, we've got to distinguish from these kinds of idiotic conceptions of globalization from those which stem from a scientific conception. I understand Mr. LaRouche this morning made some particular points about the Copenhagen summit. Either Adam or Summer, I think you were there. If you can just tell us what he said.
Sure. Well,
yes.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead, Summer?
Oh yeah, I would just bring up that he brought up the fact that you've got this Copenhagen summit. It's the whole horse. I can't remember the exact words that he was bringing up around this, but the idea behind the summit is the same thing that emerged in National Security Study Memorandum 200, which was put out by Henry Kissinger in 1974. Which was an explicit discussion about the fact that we had to reduce the world's population because, on the one hand, it was veiled in the fact that too much population is bad for these countries. Like, Henry Kissinger really cared about that. But the more fundamental side of it is that the way these guys think about human beings is disgusting. But the way that they think about economics as a result of the way they think about human beings is horrendous on top of that. So they said you have to reduce the world's population in order to preserve the world's resources for a few. And so what you've got coming out of the Copenhagen summit and the discussion of a global economy and global pollution and all this other junk is really a move, and now explicitly so, to reduce the world's population so that you can keep them from polluting. And it's ridiculous. But I know Mr. LaRouche has consistently said it's the same kind of fraud you get in science with the second law of thermodynamics. You create an artificial boogeyman, and then you organize everything in a certain field around that artificial boogeyman. In this case, we're talking about pollution, CO2, and all these things. None of this is scientifically – it's not only not scientifically proven, but it's been shown that human beings do not cause the warming of the planet. But the sun does have something to do with that.
I think Nancy Pelosi might add to the cooling of the planet, but that's just a personal observation. Adam, you wanted to say something about the Copenhagen summit?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Well, I think what really separates our idea of looking at the world from an entirety or, quote-unquote, a globalized world is that we intend to respect the cultures and the language groups of other countries. And really, you know, I don't think the greenies don't really understand what they're being used to do, because not only is the intention of the British Empire to wipe away most of the world's population, which now, if anyone's been following the Copenhagen, the actual on-the-ground reports of what's going on in Copenhagen, it's being publicly discussed that the population of the world needs to be reduced, that is the most, quote-unquote, cost-effective way to reduce greenhouse emissions. But not only do they want to do that, does the British Empire want to do that, but they actually want to remove the cultures of the world. They pretty much want a one-world culture. They want a one-world government and a one-world culture. They want to remove all of the thousands of years of irony that's built into languages. They want to wipe that away and pretty much move back to the concept where just a handful of people rule over a small group of slaves. And so that's really the difference between our concept of interconnected world and the empire's idea of globalization, is that we want to actually keep and improve other nations, as their language, respecting their history, and instead focus on the idea that even though we have these different language groups and these different peoples in different countries, that we are ultimately still human. And that's really what separates our idea of an interconnected world versus the empire's concept of globalization.
And that's implicit in Russia's four-power agreement also, that you have this cooperation on these higher questions of science and culture. I'm sorry, go ahead, Keisha.
I was just going to say, and if I may add to that, I think one of the essential principles that we have to look at is the way that people think about, you brought up this question earlier about how it is that most people will go along with the line that we have to start with a grassroots or bottom-up approach. But that's not the way that the universe is organized. And you actually have to look at how the universe is organized in terms of principles. And this idea that's very relevant and very important to understand when it comes to differentiating our understanding of mankind versus what's going on in Copenhagen, is to look at what is the creative power and nature of the human beings versus the animals. And this is something that requires, as we discussed earlier, an education of the population. Because you have a population that has been demoralized and dumbed down. You have a population that has been rejected real science. So you have a generation. You have generations under the baby boomer generation and our current youth generation that has no basis of knowledge in real science. And it's very prominent to understand and important to understand, should I say, the role of the LaRouche Youth Movement and what Summer, myself, Adam, and Rachel have been involved in over the years working with Mr. LaRouche on this development of a principled orientation from a top-down organized perspective of how the universe is actually organized, studying the ideas of Kepler and Kepler's discoveries of universal gravitation. Because if you actually understood man's ability to grasp these unique and profound principles, then you wouldn't push a policy as it's being pushed in Copenhagen for population control and limitations to growth. And now just one other comment on that, you look at how long this policy has been pushed for reduction of population and reduction of limitations to growth and technology. Where I was just reading today in an article where there was an interview in Der Spiegel by, and you may bring this up a little bit later, interview with the co-author of the 1972 book Limits to Growth, Dennis Meadows. And Meadows, in his interview on December 9th, which was actually my birthday, was talking about how the Copenhagen summit was not at all going to achieve anything important, that we had to move more rapidly on population reduction. And his policy is that we will never be able to sustain more than 2 billion people on the planet that would actually live a comfortable life and have reached the decent and standards of living. And these are people who have the idea of man as being nothing more than animals, that we could never expand or expound our horizon outside of a certain boundary and limitations placed on us on Earth. But if people remember, after the Club of Rome conference in 1968, we actually went beyond those challenges of so-called limitations to mankind's development, and we took that on with a space development of sending a man to the moon and getting a man to the moon and getting them back safely. And this was the optimism that JFK had in mind. So what they're proposing at the Copenhagen Climate Summit is a complete objection to this nature of the creative powers of mankind.
Well, Meadows, of course, goes back to the original group of people who launched the global push for population reduction, along with Paul Ehrlich's publication of the book The Population Bomb, Rachel
right.
Carson's book The Silent Spring, and then Meadows and Forrester's book called Limits to Growth. What they showed is that there's a limit to their mental growth. But certainly, Keisha, what you're saying about creativity and the advance of man historically proves that these guys actually belong in a primate environment somewhere and protect human beings from them. Let me
Absolutely.
Remind our listeners now, you can ask questions of our panelists today. You can send in your questions to radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. And if we don't get to your questions on the air, I think the candidates will be more than happy to respond to you. Now, Keisha, I wanted to bring up this question that we took up at the beginning in terms of educating the mass strike, that this is one of the themes that Lyndon LaRouche has been emphasizing. Everyone remembers the visible side of this in the summer, which peaked in August. You were in the middle of the mass strike process. We've seen new groups emerging, the Tea Party group, the Ron Paul Anti-Federal Reserve mobilization, a growing sense now among African Americans that Obama is ignoring their problems. How do you see pulling together a majority coalition and giving them the ideas, getting them to adopt the LaRouche plan? How do you see the campaign working to do that, Keisha?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that we're discussing with the campaigns in terms of a national policy orientation is that you have to throw this make a deal practical orientation out the window, that there is no practical solutions to the crisis. And you have to be willing to go out and tell the truth. Look, this current Congress, the current leadership has failed the population. They did not meet the mandate that the population put forth when the Congress when a Democratic majority was put into Congress in 2006, or when President Obama came in 2008. And you see a population, the constituency right now, that is looking, they're looking for ideas, they're looking for solutions, and this question of educating the population is key. One of the things we're discussing here in Texas in the campaign is having more concentrated classes on the development of the United States, what the actual Constitution represents. You have people that run around here in Texas that carry their Constitution around as though it's just the Bible and quote literally from it, but have no conception principally of the fight that was waged to make this nation a great nation, a republic, and a sovereign nation state. The education is vital, particularly around the understanding of Alexander Hamilton's development of a national banking system and a credit system, what the ideas of Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution represents, because you can't just blanketly go around holding your Constitution without taking action and orienting the population around what it means to live in a republic. And so it's going to be a challenge, but I think our prime responsibility is going out, holding classes, holding discussions, bringing people in. And this is what a lot of the current representatives or elections don't, people running for office don't do. They don't have a national orientation perspective around ideas and actually educating the population. And this is what we're bringing into the Tea Party meetings thus far, into the mass strike ferment that you're finding in the population, into the Democratic Party. And if there are Republicans that want to listen, to the Republican Party too, because this is not about parties, but it's about, can we actually educate the population on the principles that they have to understand to get us out of this looming crisis.
Well, this is an important issue. And by the way, I think Rachel has just joined us, so Rachel, I'll be with you in just a second. But I think the idea that LaRouche has is precisely what you're saying, that you have people who are angry. They've expressed it to the Congress. The Congress got frightened, went back to Washington, and then they haven't shown their head since. They're hiding out. But even some of them are reading the polls that show that people hate the Congress. They don't trust them. They feel betrayed, as Summer mentioned earlier. And so the question is not just to build a movement of hate Obama or hate the Congress, but to put in the population an understanding of what the alternative is. Now, speaking of educating the population, I think Rachel has just joined us from some campaign activity. Rachel, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, welcome to the program. We've been discussing the uniqueness of the campaigns that you, Keisha, and Summer will be running. We also have Adam on this show with us, Adam Sturman. Let me just ask you, because I put in a couple of words for you earlier, but you're running against one of the biggest caricature of a foghorn, leghorn type politician there is, Barney Frank. What are you discovering in the district? Are there people who understand Barney Frank's role in protecting these swindlers at the banks and financial institutions that have gotten $24 trillion while there's not a penny available for protecting housing or jobs? What are you picking up on the campaign trail?
You're definitely getting a lot of both. There's a few people that think Barney has helped them because, you know, he's helped the Portuguese, or, you know, one guy told me that, you know, he was part of this loophole notch baby category that, you know, Barney had helped him to get recognition. But then even those people, you take those people through, you know, okay, you know, but look what the Democratic Party is doing. Do you support war in Afghanistan? You know, and they say no. You say, okay, did you support Obama's health care policy? You know, this gentleman said no. If you put out, you know, the health care policy for a vote across Massachusetts, it would be no. So he's against that. So you just kind of have to, you know, a lot of people have a problem of thinking their congressman is okay while the rest of the Congress is not so good. So especially with Barney, we definitely have all the tools to take people through understanding that, no, this guy is not good. You know, just because he spoke at your child's elementary school, think about what effect this is going to have on, you know, your child's elementary school and your job. So there is a little bit of work to do in that regards of just, you know, taking people through it a little bit, you know, people that might not understand what effect this guy actually is having. We have had to do some work like that, but it doesn't take too much. And then you generally find people intrigued. But also you are just getting a lot of people that are just excited, you know, from the beginning about the prospect of a young person. You know, they meet me and they have a sense that I'm not just, you know, in it for myself, obviously. I represent LaRouche. LaRouche has a proven track record of what he's willing to fight for and his understanding of the solution. So if I represent that, then, you know, people have a sense that means something.
And, Rachel, you have a town meeting coming up next weekend. Do you want to give the listeners the information on that?
Yeah, that'll be Saturday the 19th from 1:30 until 3:30. At the Taunton Public Library.
All right, and people should write that down, and if you don't live in Massachusetts, call someone who does. Now, I want to get back to the other question LaRouche brought up today, and again, Adam and Summer were at the discussion with Mr. LaRouche, where he reemphasized the importance of keeping our eye on the financial system. And Summer, you mentioned this, that the system is dead. We're seeing the new corpses emerge, whether it's Dubai, the various speculative luxury real estate ventures in that part of the world, or the nation of Greece, which is now being told that they, no matter what they do, they have to take their orders from the bankers and cut their budget. But it's not just Greece. It's Ireland. It's Spain. It's Portugal. Not only that, the two biggest debtor nations in the world really are Great Britain and the United States. So how do we get this across in the campaigns to the population that they should forget their illusions about blowing out their credit cards for Christmas goods? Maybe Christmas will be canceled this year. How do you get that across, Summer, in your organizing?
I think one of the big jokes that was made today was that we're going to see a super increase in undertaker jobs to take down the dead economy. Just one last effort for job creation. I think Obama's going to sign this bill into action shortly.
Well, they're stimulating an increase in the death rate.
Yeah. Necrophilia, stimulating death. But I think to avoid necrophilia, which away from the Obama campaign policy of necrophilia, what we're saying is that we can take people. I think people already understand. I think right now what happened in August on TV showed people that people were upset, but that people, there's been no solution at all posed to these people who got up at the town hall meetings. And they're still angry. They're growing angrier. And they have to be guided by us, as Keisha was bringing up, educating these citizens that this has got to be the key, and you have to teach them what the real American Revolution was all about, and teach them about the fight between Plato and Aristotle, and that the forefathers, the people who founded the nation, they sided with Plato against Aristotle. And many people don't even know that. Or the people who Keisha's talking about, the people who cite the Constitution literally, do they know that they may cite the Constitution, but they think like Aristotle because of the way they're citing the Constitution? And that kind of bringing that to life in people's minds is something I think that something that Mr. LaRouche has brought up quite a bit, and he keeps bringing up, and he's bringing it up in the context of, we don't really know what's going to happen a week from now. We don't know what's going to happen in the next 4 weeks. But that big things will happen in that time period because of the historical setting of an economic crisis combined with a population that's being reinvigorated with its historical tradition that it never even knew it had. But I think that in this kind of situation, he speaks of a Shelley moment, and a moment based on a Percy Bysshe Shelley and his writing in defense of poetry, where he speaks of people who are controlled as if from the outside by the principle of dynamics, which is something that they themselves are not even aware of when it seizes control of their actions. And they're surprised by the great things they can accomplish because of the kind of situation that's being presented to them. And that kind of thing, I think that by joining hands across the United States between California, Massachusetts, and Texas with these three campaigns, what we can do is ignite the imagination of the mass of individuals who are ready to take that kind of leadership, and they find something in themselves that they're surprised about, which is them taking that kind of leadership.
Now, we have a question from a listener who, by the way, also has a shop for producing, it looks like, T-shirts and bumper stickers, so I'll pass that on to you guys. But it's Adam Rodriguez who asked the question. Adam, maybe you'd like to take this. He raises a question that was initially something that other people asked. With the complete disarray in the Democratic Party, given that we have a president who has turned his back on the FDR tradition, that we have a Congress which has been organized by Pelosi and Barney Frank in particular against the FDR-type solutions, the Franklin Roosevelt-type solutions that LaRouche represents, he asked the question of why it's better to run as a Democrat instead of running as an independent. And he said, I do think the Democratic Party needs to be reformed and rebuilt from the bottom up. Adam, do you have some thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a very good question that you ask, because that's something that a lot of people think out there, that we should form our own party and try to change the system from that standpoint. The reason why I think that's not the best way to go is mainly because you have to approach politics from the top down. You can't think of yourself as being some type of influence block inside a big institution called Congress. You have to start from the top down. And when we start from the top down in politics, we take an FDR-style orientation. And that's really the point about sticking with the Democratic Party and trying to change this party as opposed to trying to form a new influence bloc, giving it a name, and then sticking that into Congress as a parliamentary system. Because we approach, like I said, we approach this thing from the top down. We're not a parliamentary system. We have serious, long-lasting economic traditions and economic principles that we represent uniquely as a nation on the planet. And in order to really represent those American system principles, we have to represent that thrust in history. So you look at Franklin Roosevelt, you look at his great-grandfather, I believe, who worked with Alexander Hamilton, who FDR wrote his doctoral dissertation about. So you look at FDR as a person, you look at his past, what brought him to the point of being able to be that president, and now we're in the future from where FDR was, and we're looking back to FDR to what and bringing that tradition into the future. So that's the reason why we have to represent that American tradition from the top down, as opposed to trying to form this influence block from the bottom up in this, you know, this vast institution known as Congress. So that's the reason why.
Very good, because I think that gets at the question that I posed at the very top, which is that how do three candidates change the country? And it's precisely that orientation. We're not talking about three separate candidates in three isolated locations in the country, although some people might think that Massachusetts, Texas, and California are the most important states in the nation. But what you actually have is that by working with Lyndon LaRouche, you're part of an international focus. And Rachel, I'd like to throw out to you what you're doing to get across the idea of the four power agreements. Summer talked about it a little bit earlier in terms of his district, but how you're getting, what you're doing to get people to get this idea that we have the possibility to break with this dead financial system and start something new.
Okay. Well, I think one thing that's important for people to think about right now in terms of the role of the four powers is to look at it in light of the Copenhagen conference that's going on, where there's a definite move led by the British to force all nations to undergo a global legal control over their industrial output. And especially China and India have been opposing this, realizing that this would mean death for their population, and that the very premise of the Copenhagen Treaty, as it was leaked, actually excludes poorer nations from developing, to a greater degree than developed nations by the ratio of 2-1. That is, that developed nations would be able to put out CO2 twice as much as less developed nations. So this is definitely a policy of genocide. And when you understand it as an intentional policy from that standpoint, then you can see the role of China and Russia and India and the United States as being necessary to do the opposite policy, to look at population as a virtue and development as a virtue, and that we need to create a force that's not part of this British-controlled system that has the power to overcome it. But there is an explicit policy to control especially these nations, especially the United States, Russia, China, and India, and that we have to completely stop that policy and actually use these nations to join together to oppose it. And I just think that the insanity of this policy as it's come out recently, out of these leaked documents from the Copenhagen Conference and from East Anglia University, that it's becoming more and more obvious to people that this is a serious policy to lie to the population to get them to accept policies that will destroy their very future and themselves.
Okay, you're listening to the LaRouche Show. We have a little more than 15 minutes, so there's still time. If you have a question for the three candidates for Congress, we have with us Summer Shields, who's running against Nancy Pelosi. And I think I've been joking with Summer that we're probably going to see some expressions on her face, even if it means having her face crack when she discovers she's running against Summer. We have Keisha Rogers, who's running in the Democratic primary in the 22nd District of Texas. And you just heard from Rachel Brown, who's running against Barney Frank, bailout Barney Frank, up in the Boston area of Massachusetts. And we also have Adam Sturman with us from Purcellville. So we have time for your questions at radio@larouchepub.com. So please, if you have something for us, give us a call. Now, Keisha and Summer, let me throw out to the two of you. Both of you have talked about this a bit. I'd like you to go into a little more depth on this idea of taking young people who have a terrible education and inspiring them with the space program, but how do you get between the gap of a terrible education and the need for advanced scientific work, engineering, and so on, to rebuild the nation? LaRouche talked at his webcast about the revival of something along the lines of the Civilian Conservation Corps. Have either of you thought about that, and what kind of responses do you think we're going to get from young people with that? Summer or Keisha, either of you?
Well, I think that the response is going to be very overwhelming in terms of the fact that you look at, one, what's happening with the collapse of employment of skilled labor amongst our youth generation. I think there were reports that were put out just a few weeks ago that there's almost a 52% increase in unemployment amongst 18 to 35-year-olds. We've seen a collapse of our vocational, scientific, technological education amongst young people, and the skills that they need to even start to think about the revival of something like a Moon-Mars project, the space colonization and development, or for that matter, the skills that we need for just building the basic infrastructures of our nation are not there amongst the up-and-coming generations. So the response from our generation, and because I think all three of us fall between that 18 to 35 generation, is going to be an optimistic response that, okay, somebody is fighting with a future orientation for our interest. And that means that people have to throw away their practical understandings of science, or throw away this notion of Aristotelian notion of man and science, because you have to think outside the box, think outside the earth and the universe, and actually start to say, well, what are the next 25 to 50 years going to look like? And this is why, to start with, this revival, as Mr. LaRouche proposed, is a very good idea of the Civilian Conservation Corps, because you look at, of CCC, because you look at it, as though, as a development of how you're going to train your young people in the needed skills, which is going to actually prepare them for developing for the future. And we don't have that right now. You look at what our youth generation is, what they're inspired by, violent video games, by taking on an anti-science approach that has been placed into our society. So it's going to be very important to take young people off the streets, to take them out of the depths of war in Afghanistan, where our president is currently trying to increase over 30,000 more troops into Afghanistan, out of the war zones of Iraq and elsewhere, and put them into productive employment, give them the skills that they need to advance in society.
Well, Adam, how optimistic are you that we can get people out of Facebook and video games, maybe get them to think outside the Xbox, as Keisha was saying? How optimistic are you that we can do that?
I'm very optimistic. Really, the main thing that we have to do for young people is we need to give them a sense of production and of physical economics. That's really how it's through a concept of physical economics that a person can have or can begin to develop a concept that their lives actually mean something for the future. I know when I was young, I was one of the lucky people in my generation to actually have my grandfather present at our dinner table which is something that a lot of people today, young people today, really have no idea of what that's like. But he used to sit at our dinner table, used to eat dinner with us. He lived with us for a period of his life. And I remember him telling me stories about what happened during World War II and what that was like. And so even so that's really how we're going to get people, young people, back to join the human race, so to speak, is that we're going to go back to a productive society. We're going to get rid of this idea that we are the new white collar class. We are we're nothing but pleasure seekers until we die, which is really the idea that most young people have. And that's really the way we're going to do it. We go back to a productive society. We begin to give young people skills. We give them jobs that deal directly with production. And when I say production, I don't mean make work jobs. I mean high technology, machine tool, design, operation. And that's really what we want to do. I mean, young people today have no connection to production. They have no idea about physical economics, and that's the way that we're going to get the young people, the young generations, back on track. They really have no skills. I mean, that's really what it's about.
And Summer, you're going to be back in San Francisco soon. What are you planning with your campaign? How are you going to bring these issues out into the forefront in your district in California?
Well, I like what both Keisha and Adam were just saying right now on this Civilian Conservation Corps idea that Mr. LaRouche has brought up. I think that one of the things that came up today in discussion with Mr. LaRouche is that the problem that many of the better people who want to reorganize the financial system, they see that we're broke, they see that there's no way out of this crisis, they see that every time any sort of reform is proposed, things get worse, is that even the better people have gone with this green jobs approach, looking for building windmills or something like that, or building some solar power panels or something simple like that. But that it's not, but it comes from more of a, I think you could say, a pessimism that you can't overcome the lack of skill level in the population. That because you can't overcome the lack of the need for high technology skill levels, they say, let's go with green jobs. And I think that the fight, and I think this is going to be the same with Rachel's campaign and Keisha's campaign, as Keisha just mentioned about the space program and looking 25 to 50 years from now, that the key fight is going to be to build the optimism necessary to get people to commit to the kind of policy that's going to be a mass skill improvement policy, like a Civilian Conservation Corps approach that Franklin Roosevelt went with when he was in office.
Okay, thanks. And Rachel, let me ask you this, because I think many people around the country are hoping that Barney Frank will agree to a debate with you. Have you approached him yet, and are you planning on doing that?
I have not yet, but I was considering doing that on Dartmouth campus of, I think it's University of Massachusetts, Dartmouth campus, where we have a student who is in the process of setting up a club. And so I was thinking of that for the venue, which, yeah, would definitely be fun.
Well, with Barney Frank, you got to be very careful that you're standing back far enough that he doesn't hit you with his saliva projections when he starts to speak. Now, Barney already had a confrontation with you, which made you, as we talked about earlier, somewhat famous. It's hard for me to believe that he has support in the district. You said some people like him. What's the plan? You're going to just go out, I guess, and barnstorm the district and tell people what they have to do to join with the LaRouche plan? Is that the basic idea?
Yeah, we're going to do everything that's possible. And, you know, for example, today we were just out having a rally at Brookline, which is, you know, northern part of the district. Over the next few weeks, we're going to be having Saturday rallies for, you know, high visibility, inspire people, getting them laughing, know about Barney. You could probably have some impersonators. Now today I was out there and I had a dining room table on my head. And it was, you know, I'm telling people that Barney is going to lose his seat to a dining room table. So, yeah, we're going to have some fun with those types of things and then follow it up by going door to door in the neighborhoods that we just had, you know, a big rally at. So they'll see us and then they'll get to talk to us and we'll just, the word will just spread. You know, did you hear about what's going on? You hear about these people running against Barney Frank? So, yeah, that as well as campaign events, and we're getting people to come in and volunteer. Well, we already have people that want to come in and do phone calls and door-to-door. So,
and give people, again, the information on the meeting you're having next Saturday.
Okay, so that's Saturday at the Public Library in Taunton, and that's from 1:30 until 3:30.
And hopefully your website will be up before then so people can go to Rachel Brown for Congress on the Internet and get that information in case you didn't write it down now, plus more. Now, Keisha, I'm told your website is supposed to be up by Tuesday.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Do you have any other plans? I assume given this discussion we've had so far today about the importance of Copenhagen, that the three of you will put out some statement individually on the Copenhagen conference. Is that something you're planning, Keisha?
Yes. And I put a short statement before, and we'll expound on that, put out additional statements also. And in terms of your question on the plans is, anyone who lives in Texas in the 22nd Congressional District, I am petitioning and getting on the ballot, and we have gotten an overwhelming response in the district already. It's interesting. I've actually gone out and organized the population, the constituency myself, and, you know, the first thing they want to ask is, what are you going to do about NASA? Because it's at the bottom of the list for the current incumbent. And when I give them my plan of action for putting NASA at the top of the list, they're completely optimistic. And you've had people who have left their contact information are wanting to support in every way that they can because they know how important this district and region of the country is in terms of its development relationship to the Johnson Space Center. And I had out just going around and hitting places, organizing in places like bookstores, I would just stop and talk to people about what my campaign and what these national the campaign in terms of a national perspective would represent. And you could see people's faces light up, and there was a real sense of optimism that, okay, despite the fact that these are only three campaigns, that they can actually have a real thrust and impact on the rest of the campaigns that are going to be taking place and on the Congress and the nation as a whole. So it's been a lot of fun going out already and organizing, petitioning, and getting people to back this perspective that we're campaigning on.
All right, and let me just, we have less than 2 minutes. Summer, you're finishing a video on Africa. You've been to Africa a couple times as a representative of the LaRouche Youth Movement. Tell us quickly about this video that's going to be up soon.
This video, it's going to go through quite a bit. It's going to talk about African development, and it's going to begin with a discussion on why African development is important to all people. If you let Africa die, if you have one part of the world that's being destroyed, inevitably, if you allow that to happen, that becomes the underlying principle of the entire society. So you have to develop Africa. And the only way to do it is going to be by uniting these four powers that Mr. LaRouche has been calling for quite some time, United States, Russia, China, and India. And it should be up tomorrow on the website.
And what's the title that people should look for?
The title is Africa, Mankind's Moral Test.
Okay, that's pretty compelling. Africa, Mankind's Moral Test. So you've been listening to the LaRouche Show. I'd like to thank our three candidates, Rachel Brown, who's running in Boston, Massachusetts, Keisha Rogers in Houston area of Texas, Fort Bend County, and Summer Shields in San Francisco, California. They're going to need your support. Check out their websites, which will be up next week. write checks to their campaigns. These are national campaigns. The money that you give to them will have an effect in moving the whole country. And Adam, I'd also like to thank you for joining us and participating. Adam is going to be coordinating from the center these three campaigns to make sure we stay true to this national and international thrust that Lyndon LaRouche has emphasized as the importance for these campaigns. So thank you very much, and you've been listening to the LaRouche Show. We'll be back next Saturday, and tentatively we have as our guest for next Saturday Helga Zepp LaRouche, who will be able to put Copenhagen into context for us and hopefully be able to tell us why it should be called the Floppenhagen Conference. So thank you, and goodbye for today.
Thank you, Harley.